Hi, and welcome along to Early Excellence's Head to Head podcast. It's great to have you here. I'm Sarah Carey, School Improvement Lead here at Early Excellence, and in these podcasts, I'll be connecting with real head teachers and school leaders. We'll be discussing hot topics in primary and early years education and sharing some real experiences. So keep listening to hear more about school inspections and impactful school improvement strategies. Hello, everybody. I hope you're all well. This term seems to be absolutely whizzing by, and it's time for another Head to Head podcast. And today I'm talking to Deputy Head Teacher Abbas Jafar from Minette Infant and Nursery School, who will be sharing their recent journey of a school-based nursery expansion project that he's been working on within his setting. So welcome along. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. I'm really looking forward to today's conversation because, of course, the government announced their school-based nursery expansion project, and at Early Excellence, we've been having lots of conversations with schools considering it, maybe going through the process, looking at the application. But actually, you've been through that process, you've worked it all through, and actually you had a successful bid, so you've rolled things out. So I think it's going to be so helpful to hear your real life experience and journey. There may have been bumps in the road or not, but I think it'll be so helpful because, of course, Tranche 2 is taking place as we're recording. So there might be schools thinking about it or actually working through the process. So hopefully listening to our conversation today will perhaps give them some pointers and some insights, and just great to hear a real life journey. So looking forward to it for sure. As always, it's always good to start with a little bit about you and then a little bit about your school before we kind of dig deeper into the project and things. So yeah, let's hear a little bit more about you and your experience and your role.
Okay, so I've been teaching for around 15 years now across two schools, both wonderfully diverse. So the first one was based in Watford, and I did my PGC placement there, and then I got the job there, and I taught from early years up to year six and lots in between as well. I was EAL lead there because there's a high percentage of children speaking English as an additional language, English lead and EYFS lead. And I've taken some of those roles into my current school, which is based in West London in Hayes, where I am deputy head teacher, but also English lead and early years lead as well. In terms of my current school, we're an infant and nursery school. We're full form entry. So we have, with the two-year-olds that we're speaking about today, we have 520 pupils. We have capacity for 520 pupils, and we're above national for pupil premiums, SEND, EAL. I think recent figures are 33% for pupil premium, around 20% for SEND, and 92% for EAL.
Fantastic. Wow, lots of information there. So really interesting to hear about your teaching career, kind of early years and through to year six. That doesn't often happen. So you've got a real spread there and lots of plates spinning. And I know, because we were just talking, you're still in class, aren't you, as well, in terms of it, your current school. We were just saying, I've just been teaching and now you've come out to do this. So spinning lots of plates for sure.
I think most people in schools are, though, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think I was a head of an infant school, but listening, not as big as yours. Actually, that's a really big infant school, isn't it? Actually, in some respects, it's bigger than some primaries. And you've expanded with your two-year-olds, as you say, that we're going to be talking about today. But a big infant and nursery school. So actually, really exciting to kind of think about this project. So let's kind of go back to, before we launch into the school-based nursery project, I think it would be helpful to hear about, as early years lead with that hat on, your vision and your values and your ethos, and a bit more about your early years in particular, because of course it makes up probably half of your school potentially with the numbers that you've got. So tell us a little bit about that, if that's all right.
Yeah, so like you said, it's more than half. So it's such a big part of our school. Mm-hmm. I started here around 5 years ago, and the head started not soon after me. And we felt like the early years didn't fit our ethos or what we believed in. So we've come on a big journey in the last 5 years. There's lots still to do, but we wanted a well thought out environment. We wanted an ambitious and rich curriculum. And we wanted adults who have high quality, sustained interactions throughout the day. So we felt like if we got the environment, the curriculum and the adults right, we'd have a great early years. So in terms of things we've done so far, we've really reduced the numbers of tables and chairs in favor of defined, well-considered areas with resources that earn their place on the shelf. So that's what we've done for the environment. For the curriculum, when we first started, there were small groups happening throughout the day, including in child-initiated time. So it was mixed. Adult-directed and child-initiated were being mixed. So we've worked hard to separate them. There's your time for adult-directed, and then there's time for child-initiated. And our mantra is child-initiated is sacred. The play is sacred, and it's around 3 hours we aim for per day. So they have that time. That's including around an hour and a half in the morning, an hour and a half in the afternoon. So they can really wallow in their play, they can really spend time playing. And we've done a lot of work training our staff in adult-child interactions. So when we started, staff we're expected to record up to 3 observations per child per week. And slowly, slowly, we took that expectation away. And now there's no expectation. You don't need to do any recording because we want staff to just play and just be in the moment with the children. We have a lot of work still to do. Like, as you know, in schools, it's never done, is it? But that's where we are now. Our vision is one of play-based learning, mm-hmm. high-quality environments where adults can just be present in the moment with children.
Yeah, and I think that's it's so great to hear that all of those things that you're talking about really resonate with me and certainly with the work that we do at Early Excellence. And of course, those lenses that you're talking about, environment, adults and curriculum, are all woven together to really kind of support best practice. And it's all around the children and kind of knowing them as the unique child. So it really kind of resonates. And I think it's really important that environment has to be really, really strong. But of course, it can't stand alone. It needs to connect to your curriculum. And your adults need to understand the provision and the value of that in terms of how the children are learning through their play and exploration within that. So sounds really, really powerful and really good to hear. And I like the term sacred. That is a very, very strong message. This is sacred for our children. And actually what you're saying is it's the most important part of the learning process. And of course, directed adult-led teaching at gathering times, or as you've kind of described, kind of group gatherings in terms of giving directed opportunities, still has to take place. We still have to impart knowledge and kind of teach children skills and introduce them to concepts. But that sacred time that you're talking about in continuous provision, that uninterrupted time so the children can become fully immersed, is so important. And of course, the adults, from what you're saying, can spend time with the children during that time of kind of sacred play and will be really, really powerful, particularly if, you know, they've had the training and support and have the knowledge and understanding. So it sounds like there's been a lot of work already and, you know, you're in a place that you're really pleased with. But of course, we continue to develop and refine, as is always the case. But then, in addition to all of that development, you made the decision that you would like to expand, I guess, in light of the government drive for the school-based nurseries. So tell us a little bit about why you decided to kind of expand and make the application. What drove your thinking around that?
So we already have a fairly successful 120 place nursery for 3-year-olds, 3 to 4-year-olds. But there is demand locally for 2-year-old places. And we gather that from parent surveys, from just conversations we've had with parents on the door, lack of nursery places in the local vicinity for 2-year-olds. So we know there's a need for it. There's a demand for it. Also in terms of the school, we feel if we get children in earlier, then we can support them earlier. We can identify and remove barriers to learning earlier. And that extra year with us would really help them to settle into school life. School's not right for every two-year-old, but we feel that there is a need for it, and both from the school, from the government, and from parents, that there is a need for two-year-old places. And so we decided to take that first step into applying for this provision.
Yeah, okay. And interesting, isn't it, in terms of you've already got, because some schools have reception and no nursery provision at all, so have expanded into their 3 to 4s, but you've already got 3 to 4 set up, 120, so it feels like the next step would be that two-year-old provision. That the school's listening, it doesn't just have to be two-year-old provision. It could be that they've got 3 to 4-year-old nursery already that they might want to expand more. But I think obviously what's key in terms of the information that's out there is about sufficiency. So a conversation with your local authority as well about, you know, if there is demand and kind of what their stance on it is, and if they would endorse the kind of application. That, as I know, is part of the process. So of course, you have that feeling, the parents are giving that feedback, and obviously there's demand in the area from the research that you've done. So that kind of gives you the almost the green light to kind of say, we're going to go ahead. And you're quite right, while school-based nursery might not be for every school and for every child, in terms of quality, practice and provision, you're already kind of feeling very confident in terms of your practice and provision in early years. Expanding that and having your children in sooner, again, can only strengthen that start point, as long as, I suppose, it's really important that schools know that having two-year-olds, in your instance, isn't just about teaching little reception children. Actually, two-year-old practice, two-year-old provision, the spotlight on those primary areas is really, really important. So I think obviously for yourself, you're really experienced in early years, you will know that. But for schools considering it, whether they're opening three-year-old provision or whether they're looking at two-year-olds, it is going at it in terms of that knowledge and understanding, knowing about how the provision needs to look and feel and how that is different to reception potential in some instances, and kind of what the priorities are. So it sounds like you kind of did your research, and you're bringing that knowledge with you as well. So you made that, you kind of made what went into that process. So I think because as I say, we're in tranche two as it stands right now. So tell us a little bit about the process that you went through in terms of the bid. What bits of information do you think are great, would be good to share?
Our head teacher led on all the application process, which was nice, because then it made sure I was free for spending the money and buying all the resources. But in terms of the first step, I think it's to contact the relevant people at the local authority, or your MAT if you're a part of a trust.
Absolutely.
Getting the feeders out, making sure that they're supportive of you starting up a two-year-old provision. When we did that, the people at the local authority advised that we need to put together a business plan, which is a really comprehensive document that outlines that there is sufficient demand, make sure that you're financially viable. You need to look at population trends. There's something called the childcare sufficiency assessment, which your local authority will do yearly, checking that, putting data from parent surveys. So it's really comprehensive, but in essence, it just makes sure that it's the right thing to do for your school.
Yeah, of course.
And then when you have your business plan, you need to run it past your governing board and the local authority as well. If the governing board approved, which they did for us, the local authority then did a consultation with the local community. Once the consultation is approved by cabinet, then you've got that green light to start getting quotes from builders. So for us, we had to get 3 quotes. We went with one of the quotes because we had building work that needed to be done in the empty classroom we had. And then the builders came in, they did that work. While all of this is going on, once you've had the green light, you need to start advertising it and getting the children signed up.
It's like two things running in parallel, isn't it, really? There's the actual kind of day-to-day nuts and bolts of getting the space ready and prepared and meeting the space for ratios, meeting the space for numbers of children, how much space those children need. Particularly for yourselves with younger children, there will be kind of the changing areas, potentially sleep spaces, all of that sort of stuff. So the physical part of that. But of course, you need to be drumming up your numbers of children that are going to be coming in. So I think that's really important, seeing those lying running in parallel.
And then the numbers of children also impacts the recruitment. So you need to see how many children you have, look at ratios, and then recruit the staff all at the same time. Yeah, that's the process that we went through.
Yeah, really, really helpful. And as you say, it's kind of front loaded, isn't it? In going through the kind of the forms and having the professional conversations and getting it endorsed with the people that it needs to be endorsed. And again, it's not just about school saying, oh yeah, we want the children in. Actually, there is a much bigger picture than that. And of course, some schools won't have a space. They might be looking at build space. So it's not a quick process by any stretch of the imagination, for sure. So obviously, from your point of view, the bid was successful. So then what happened next for you in terms of what have you established? How does it feel? What did you do in terms of investing? You've talked a bit about recruitment and advertising the places for children to be coming in. So tell us a bit like that. Post bid, how you found out that you were successful, the what next from there?
Well, we received an email to say that we are successful. And then as soon as we got that, we created a leaflet and we advertised everywhere. We did leaflet drops through all the doors in the local area, advertising all the shops on the high street. We sent leaflets to all our parents. So we started getting children in, and we established that in the space we have, we can have up to 20 children, because it depends on the square feet of the room that you're thinking of, depends on how many children you can have in that space. So we can have up to 20. So we decided to have 20 in the morning, 20 in the afternoon. Currently, we're not offering full-time places. Mm-hmm. We just felt like we didn't have a space for them to sleep, which is something, if you are thinking of doing full-time, you would need to consider. You need to think of a lunchtime space for these children as well. So currently, we've not gone down that path, but it is something we're looking at in the future. Mm-hmm. Then in terms of funding, once the funding came through, we decided to use it for the renovation work, which took up the majority of funding. So we did the indoor area, but also the garden area for the two-year-olds, and then also the resourcing of those areas. So making sure that we buy good quality resources, both for indoor and outdoor. Our head teacher has a saying where he says, buy cheap, buy twice. So we decided to buy really good quality because we want these children to have the best start in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, really insightful in terms of why you've made the decision to go mornings and afternoons rather than 30 hours and kind of the logistics thinking around that. But really, really important that you've also considered your outdoor environment as well as your indoor environment, because of course that is part of the statutory kind of, the UIFS talks about being in learning indoors, learning outdoors, and you want both of those spaces to be really, really high quality. And I think, again, sometimes such a lot of the focus can be on the indoor, but we need to be thinking about effective practice. And, you know, to your point, we want these children to make the very best start. What's going to support that? And I think, again, for your younger children, we know the prime areas of learning, you'll be teaching across the whole curriculum, but the prime areas of learning are really spotlighted for, you know, two-year-olds and nursery. And really interesting. I mean, I'm smiling a bit because we're getting to that cringy little bit of the podcast, which is why, let's be honest, you did invest for the most part in buying resources from Early Excellence, which is the bit that, as I said to you before we set this up, it's not about us, this is about your journey. But actually, I suppose one of the things I wanted to ask really is why you chose to come to us rather than somebody else. And I know you said your head says buy cheap, buy twice, and that's not what's going to happen with Early Excellence things. We often rock up at schools and there's furniture that they bought 10 or 12 years ago that's still really sturdy. So you've obviously mentioned around actually wanting that high quality, but any other reason why you chose to kind of come to Early Excellence rather than other people?
I think it's because we've worked extensively with yourselves in the past. Like I said, in the past 5 years, we've been looking at our environments a lot. And as part of that process, we have had classroom design. We've looked into the classroom design service from yourselves, and we've bought resources in the past from yourselves, and we've been really pleased with the quality of those resources, and we feel like they're good value for money. Recently, we've worked with you in terms of being a host school, so we feel like we have that partnership, and your range is so extensive that you can, anything you need for two-year-olds, three-year-olds reception, you can find on your website. So we thought, let's carry this on, let's continue this partnership. And when we did decide to go with Early Excellence, and I'm not just saying this because you're here, but the communication was genuinely really good throughout the process from the beginning to the end. Because it's new for us, we weren't sure which resources were the best for our children. So before we placed the order, one of your consultants sat down, they talked through the furniture we should get, the resources that would be best for the age and stage of the children's development, both for inside and for outside. And then we booked in a delivery date, but because of the building work not being finished, we had to postpone this and we had to change this date, which was, I was a bit worried about because the date was set, but Early Excellence were really accommodating and reschedule the date for us so that the delivery came in after the work was completed, but still before the children came in. So we still had that time to set up before the children came in. So the whole process from start to finish in terms of quality, affordability, communication was second to none.
Thank you. And it's really, I'm really delighted to hear that, because for us, it's about as it feels like you've come to us because we are trusted. You know the quality and you know the bigger picture of actually we've got the quality resources, but it is curated. Our curriculum team, we don't just kind of go willy-nilly on the learning resources. They are, as you said, connected to age and stage, connected to the statutory framework, really will support learning and development. And I think the thing that made me smile the most is you're talking about partnerships and relationships. You've engaged with us over time, and for us that's really important. It's not just, you know, you've had this and that's it. Actually, it's about growing that partnership. So absolutely delighted that that's a term that you've used without any prompting from me. Thank you so much. And
more than welcome.
It is worth saying as well, you know, we understand that, you know, deadlines can change. In your instance, it was due to building work, but we also know that schools are very different, very busy places, and things do crop up. So we would always try and be as flexible and accommodating as possible. And it's not unusual for us to be planning classroom environments from architect plans, you know, even for new build schools and settings. Actually, we can do things off plans as well. But I'm really pleased that you had a really positive experience in terms of that journey with us. Let's get to the what's really important. How's it going? What's been the impact for the children, for the families, for your staff team? Tell us.
It's going really well so far.
Good.
Said to you before, there were tears from the children.
Of course, yeah.
Not the staff, the children in the first few days, but they've settled really, really well and really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think word is spreading as well, because there have been a few other parents who've expressed interest in their children joining our provision. It might be too early to see the impact. We've only been going since September, but the early signs are very positive, and we're planning on a few more children joining in January, and then we've got a few more children ready to join in just after Easter. So I feel like numbers will pick up as well as time goes on and word spreads.
Absolutely. I think, of course, they're little children, and it is hard separating from parents and things. So tears are not unusual. But I think one of the things that will have helped those children to settle is that they've got an environment that has been set up, as you say, for their age and stage. So there will be those cosy, welcoming, safe spaces for the children to be in. The learning resources will be things that invite their curiosity and driven by their natural fascinations, things that they can access on their own to a point in terms of building that through. But also it will bring new experiences as well for children that perhaps are not as experience rich. There'll be lots of things within those environments, indoors and out, that over time the children kind of will be able to explore. But the environment, because you've chosen to run continuous provision, it means that the children know, they know what's going to be there every day. It's not going to be changing all the time. So again, it will help with that kind of settling process and really helping the children with their levels of well-being and involvement. So how about the adults then? Because of course you mentioned about recruiting and those sorts of things, but how are they finding the learning environments kind of working within them? What are they saying about the whole thing?
They're really happy. It's like their little bubble. So it's a classroom that's away from the main building, but it's an environment that they helped me set up. Mm-hmm. So they have that ownership over it. They feel like it's theirs because they had a say in where does the home corner go? Where does the construction area sit? So they have that ownership over it.
Yeah.
Like everything's so shiny and new, and it's just a nice place to be. Yeah. They're going to spend a long time there, as are the children. So you have to make sure that it's a nice area for them to spend time in and to learn in and to play in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, they will be either inspired or reinvigorated, and of course that can only be a good thing for the children as well. You know, it is difficult working in the early years. There's a lot of hard work that goes on when you're in the provision on the floor with young children. It's not an easy role at all, and it's really complex. So I think it's great that they're in a place where they're enjoying being in that environment, because that will bring lots of positivity. But I think absolutely vital is that term that you used about involving them and them having some ownership. So whilst that bid process and that expansion it's a big thing, isn't it? Let's be honest. And it will have fallen on your head and for yourself as well to be kind of looking at that big picture. But it wasn't done to, it was done with. And that rationale behind, okay, so we're going to put this here because, and yes, I know that we will have been involved as early excellence in supporting with some of that kind of room planning process. But actually, it's that granular level. The people who are going to be in it day in, day out, being involved in that and knowing the why behind things and having the confidence in what you're doing. So great, good stuff. I feel like we'll need to fast forward another year and perhaps do a year on how's it going to kind of hear some of that bigger impact. But overall, it sounds like it's been obviously a lot of hard work. It doesn't just happen. There's lots of processes to go through. And lots of thought as well. But from your point of view, are there any top tips that you think you would share for anybody going through the process right now or for future kind of tranches when they come out?
Yeah, so I was thinking about what my top tips would be, and I've come up with three. So the first one, like you said, there is lots of hard work to be done. So I think the first top tip is give yourself time. You need time to research.
Yeah.
You need time to market the provision, to do the business plan, to design the curriculum, to order the resources, for the building work to be finished. And with all of these things, there will be hiccups along the way. Things will go wrong and you'll need to fix them, or they might take longer than you initially planned. So the first piece of advice is give yourself time. Secondly, big belief is less is more. Mm-hmm. So when you get that budget come in, all that money comes in, it's quite tempting to buy lots of resources, lots of books, lots of furniture. But I think when you're doing your research into what does a two-year-old actually need, and focus on getting just those things. We feel when we say less is more, we mean less quantity is more quality. If you have less stuff, it's firstly, it's easier to tidy, but it's also easier for the children to select what they need to play with. And I've got two young children myself, and I was looking into this research about in your house, how many resources you need. Mm-hmm. And it's much, much less than you think, how many toys you actually need. I think it was something around 16 toys, and anything more is overwhelming and mm-hmm. Overstimulating for children. Of course, in a classroom with more children, you'd need more. But I think sticking with a less quantity is more quality mantra is the way to go forward. And thirdly, research carefully and research into everything. The great thing about this is it's a blank canvas. You can get it right from the start and you can make it what you want to make it. So think about what are the best books to read to children of this age? What is the best seating? Should we go for chairs? Should we go for stalls? Should we go for standing provision in certain areas? What shape of tables will generate conversation? What type of scissors should you buy? Think about the schema. So do you have opportunities in your classroom and the outside area for all the different schemas that toddlers would be needing to go through at this stage. There is a lot to think about, but take that time to research into everything because it is worth it, and you can make it yours and you can get it right from the children. Get it right for the children.
I think all three of those are absolutely kind of spot on. And I think in some respects, it's sometimes hard to pull out top tips because there's this and there's, but I think they are crucial. The time element particularly, I know that some schools that contacted us to speak to us about the process were thinking about it, but almost wanted to wait until this second process was opening up because they wanted to work through that. But time does really, really matter. And I think in terms of the less is more, agreed completely, and it's about having the right resources that are open-ended enough that the children can take it in different directions and the adult can kind of support and scaffold that. And again, we at Early Excellence have done a huge amount of thinking around that to kind of support the journey, but again, you're quite right, the research and, as I said at the start, two-year-old provision, which is what we're talking about in this instance, is very different to a reception class. They need chunkier learning resources. We need to be aware of choking hazards, for example. And of course, the other thing that we need to think about is as the year progresses, how that curriculum, how that environment will enrich so that the children can continue to progress through their two-year-old kind of developments. And really interesting that you mentioned schematic play, you know, the joy of the transporting when the children are putting things in from one place to another, and it drives staff a little bit insane, but actually that's okay because we know as staff that, you know, it's to say it's okay because that's part of the schematic play that the children are engaging in. So the learning resources and the provision need to sort that out, so we need to be able to support that. And as you say, that attention to detail, do we want our children standing in this space? So you're thinking of crafting or dough, for example, standing and kind of getting that good pressure down onto a table when they're engaging in that dough could be really, really useful for those children developing those prime areas. And it's not necessarily something that people think to look at in detail. And again, we've done that thinking behind it, but the more the staff using the provision understand the why behind it, the more successful it will be. So yeah, absolutely doing your research. And I would say similarly, if people are expanding doing their 3 to 4 nursery, those processes are still just as important because again, those nursery children are not little reception key stage one children. They are they are children in their own right at that real point in their life. So yeah, really, really helpful. So it sounds like obviously you've been working really hard on early year developments for the past 5 years. This is a really big one. But what's next? What's next at Minnet?
I think it's in terms of 2-year-olds, it's keep pushing and marketing to get our numbers up even further, and to make sure that this is sustained success. But in terms of on our school development plan, we have for the whole school oracy as a target.
Okay, yeah.
In the early years, this looks like high quality adult child interactions. And we've done a lot of work on this already. All our staff have been trained to use the Shrek model, which some people may have heard of. But we want to take this further. So the focus now is on making sure that conversations are sustained. Because we know that you need to go backwards and forwards at least 4 times to get that really high quality conversation. And we want to follow children's interests more. Because if children are interested in something and we can tap into that interest, we know that the learning will be much richer than us telling them what to play with or telling them what to do. So oracy for the whole school, but in terms of early years, sustained interactions that yeah. follow children's interests, I think, yeah. is our next step.
Yeah, and hugely important. I mean, I visit schools all the time as part of my role doing kind of strategic reviews or working with school leaders or early years leaders looking at kind of next steps for development. And of course, communication and language often comes up as a priority area in lots and lots of schools. And it's looking at, I often talk about it in terms of the communication language strategy. So not just, we're perhaps using this intervention or we've got high quality text with vocabulary, all of those things stand, but actually we know there's research out there that really shows that high quality interactions make the difference, and it is that back and forth. And that also comes back to your sacred time where the children can be in the provision and your adults can be with them, to have that back and forth conversation. And you mentioned at the very start, you said our staff can be present during that time. And I think that's physically present and mentally present as well. Those two things kind of really, really have a place. And of course, language and communication literacy are so crucial for the here and now, but also for future success as well. So, you know, it's definitely a good thing to be focusing on. And again, it's a really meaty aspect to develop. It's not a quick fix and we can do X, Y, and Z. There's lots of different strands. So it sounds like it'll keep you busy. Bless you. Good. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really valuable, I think, to hear the process that you've been through, but also the wider process. It's not just about let's get the bid, let's get the money, let's spend. Actually, it's the wider elements in terms of the business plan that you mentioned that people might not have thought about, in terms of running parallel side by side, actually the physical developments, as well as that recruitment and that process, marketing and such like. I think it's really insightful to kind of have heard all of that. And I'm so pleased that actually, you know, you did open on time, despite having kind of refurbishments and renovations, and you had got children ready to come in on that first day, and you had got staff in place, and you're already starting to grow. And it's slow and steady, isn't it? And actually, that's a good place to be. So I'm delighted that it's gone really, really well for you, and really pleased that we could be part of the process as well. But thank you so much for sharing the journey. It's been great.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Very welcome. Well, good luck with it all, and I hope to hear how it rolls forward, like I say, in another year, where we're up to. So you take care till then.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I hope you found it a valuable listen and that you've taken some things away to reflect on, or maybe things that you want to discuss with your colleagues. Of course, remember, if you want to talk about any of the issues that we've explored today, or you need support with other matters in your school, then do feel free to drop me an email, sarah@earlyexcellence.com, or why not get connected with me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Anyway, take care and join me next time for some more genuine head-to-head conversation.